to the Rockman Show. It's time for Rockman to give his opinions, his views, and his thoughts on life and rock. So grab a beer, buckle in, and get ready to rock!
How'd you like that? I know some of you probably won't like it so much, but whatever. Hey, you had to hear it for a few minutes, whatever. It's not even the whole thing. Anyway, hey, I'm back. Sorry I was gone for a couple weeks. I had a bunch of shit going on. Girlfriend was moving. Travel. And fucking life. But hey, before I get on with my nonsense over here, that was Wage War. That's a new one called Nails. I kind of liked him. It was pretty cool. Kind of like what the guy was just kind of graveling there and all pissed off. Because I'm pissed off again. You know why? It seems like it's like everybody says Ragman's pissed all the time.
Yeah, you're on the fucking rag or something.
Fuck you, dude. Fucking, I don't got a pussy.
You downstairs and not much hanging.
I know there's not a lot hanging down there, but I don't bleed out of it.
You don't?
No. Do you out of yours?
Well, sometimes.
Okay. Well, you might want to get that checked out. There's doctors for that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir, Ken.
All right. So anyway, yeah, been busy. My fucking life never gets easy. It never does. And you're probably tired of me complaining all the time of what's going on in my life. But this, I talk about life on this show. So last week, or let's go back, maybe 10 days ago, I get this fucking thing on my eye. It's not pink eye, I didn't fucking shit on my hand and rub it in my fucking eye, but I got something called a sty. And I've got friends that have them. Actually, the more you talk to people, you're like, yeah, I had that fucking thing, I fucking ate it. I don't even know what it is, but it's like a pimple on your fucking eyelid or something. And it gets fucking gnarly, dude. I mean, it's like, you're fucking 15 years old again. You got that big fucking whitehead just waiting to fucking part. Yeah, that's fucking gnarly. So the girlfriend's like, I don't know what that is. Let's go get it checked out. We got it checked out. They give me an ointment. Long story short, it's gone. But hey, I got the fucking bonus plan. I got one on the other eye now. 56 years on this fucking planet. And I have two styes within 3 weeks of each other. But this new one's like, you know what? The other guy was on the outside. I'm going to grow on the inside and irritate your eye and make it feel like you've got a piece of, like, fucking dirt in there. Fuck my life. And it gets better. Gets better. I was in fucking Canada this past week. Part of the reason I didn't get to do the show, because I had to leave short weekend last weekend. And I come home, take the metal munchkin to lunch and get to working. And she's like, hey, Pop. I'm like, yeah, what's up? She goes, you're going to be mad. I was like, oh, no. What now? What fucking now? My fucking fridge went out. You don't know how much you have in your fucking fridge until it's all gone. And you're like, fuck, dude. It was like, I don't know, $500-$600 worth of fucking groceries down the fucking toilet or in the trash can. And then I gotta wonder, okay, trash day, this is Friday, so I gotta wait all the way till next Wednesday. Or hold on, is it Wednesday? No, Thursday. There's gonna be shit fucking growing in my trash can. It's gonna be fucking foul. Poor trash guys. Sorry, can't help it. I tell you what, let's do something aggressive right now. Dealer's choice, enjoy. I got to start out complaining about something. But there, I don't know what's going on in my life. There's a lot of shit going on, man. And it sucks. I mean, I've got a good thing going on. I've got a great woman I've met, and I've talked about her on the show. She's amazing. She's made things great. I don't even know how she stays with me with all the fucking problems I got these days. Hi, right, nice rim shot.
You're welcome.
But no, it's crazy. This woman's just fucking amazing, and I've been so lucky to meet her, and she's awesome. But it's funny, you know, being an older guy than she is, you know, there's a lot of fucking problems these days. You know, fucking getting weird styes, and I had a heart thing, and I got the leg thing and the back thing, and it's like, fuck, 56 has not been a fun age. I don't know, it's not stopping me, I'll tell you that. I keep going. You know what? I'm thirsty, Mr. G.
Yeah!
Fucking thing going now, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Just give me a second. I gotta recompose myself.
All right, you do that, and I'm gonna drink a beer. So I got a fun one today. I don't know if it's good, but we will see. I actually picked this up on my travels when I was in Europe a while back. I think back in the December-ish or something. But I bought this strictly for the can. The can says Panda Tries Porn. So it's a panda reading a porn bag. How great is that? It's from the Lupolaggio Farmhouse Brewery. It's an Italian one. Motherfucker. 8% Imperial Blanche. So a blonde. Imperial Blonde Ale. I don't know if I've ever had one of these. All right, let's pour this bad boy. Oh, it looks nice. It looks nice. It looks, doesn't look like your traditional blonde, whether they can be a little hazy, but this guy don't look so bad. Oh, yeah, it is a little hazy. Oh, it's sud, lots of suds, lots of carbonation in this thing. So the can gets a 4, you know that. The beer itself looks beautiful. Really golden in color, a little hazy. Some nice lacing, a little soapy lacing. Very nice. So let me do the aroma over here. It smells strong. It smells like a blonde. Let's do it. Cheers to me. Oh, wow. That's interesting. It's very sweet, which is surprising to me. Kind of a fruity, but very sweetness at the end. Highly carbonated, kind of like I was telling you when I was looking at it. Let me take one more drink. You know, I like this. Would I give it a 4? Am I going to go back for it? Probably not. I'll give it a solid 3. It's good. Is it something I gotta have again? Probably not. Or maybe I bump it up to a 3.5 just because it's not really my style. I bought it for the can. I like it. I like it. So let's kick into the next song. This is a new one from Lacuna Coil. I love me some Lacuna Coil. This one's called In the Meantime, and it's got the chick Ash something or other from New Year's Day. And she's got a good voice, too. But I don't know if we'll get to that part. So how about a new Lacuna Coil for you? In the meantime. It's a very cool song. Love me some Lacuna Coil. Unfortunately, they're not my favorite band to see live. I think it gets a little comical between Christina Scabia and the vocalist, the male vocalist. I forget his name, but I don't know. It seems a little weird the way they banter off each other live. Though, sound-wise, they sound amazing. So, unfortunately, I've only seen them a few times live. It's just because I don't know. There's something about it. I just don't dig what they're doing back and forth. So I'd rather just listen to it on audio. And I don't need to see the visual. And there are a few bands like that that it's not fun to see live. Either it gets goofy or they're just boring to watch live. But musically, they play really good music and you love the music and you want to support it that way. But it's hard to support them live when you're just like bored or like, I don't get what they're doing up there. I don't like that. But let me tell you, I got a lot of shows coming up. Blind Guardian for one. TYR and the Rolling Stones. It's going to be a busy few weeks here. We got Lightworker coming up. A lot of stuff coming up over the next few weeks. It'll be touching on a lot of those bands. But tonight, though, I've got an interview with John Gallagher from Raven. And this is all based off that Wicked, Lotharo, Vicious Rumors, Raven tour. What a great tour. What great bands to see live. And you're going to hear some John Gallagher here in a few minutes. But before I let you go, I'm going to give you a horns up and give you some Raven. So, hold up.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Gallagher from Raven, and you are listening to The Rockman Show. Horns up and volume up.
Guys, you're on live with Ragman, mano y mano, with a legend, a thrash legend. And this guy probably, I'm going to let him say it, but I think he helped invent thrash. He's making faces. But no, I'm talking to the legendary John Gallagher from Raven. What an honor. I got to meet you when you were in Houston about a month ago. And so kind to talk to me and say, let's do an interview. So here we are.
Good to be here, man. Definitely good to be here. Yeah.
How's the tour going? When I saw y'all, it's towards the very beginning, and it was great. Unfortunately, in Houston, the promotion was jacked up. The venue had changed three times, and I'm not sure the word got out properly to have more people at the venue. But I'm hoping as the tour's progressed, you guys have had better promotion, and you're seeing a lot more faces out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a holdover from the pandemic. You know, initially when shows started back up, there was a lot of people cancelling. You know, people were actually getting sick, and because of the way the contracts were, if somebody had COVID, they had to stop the show and all that stuff. And people were buying tickets and there was no show, so they'd be like, well, I'm not buying a ticket. I'll go on the day. If it's happening, I'll go there. And that's death to promoters. They don't want that. They want their money in hand in advance. So, you know, if you sell 100, 200 tickets and they want to sell 500 and everyone turns up at the door, they don't care. They just see what was sold initially. And, of course, doing things like, you know, adding shows at the last minute and bumping them around between three venues doesn't help. So it's an unfortunate part of the game at the moment, and we're just keeping our head above water and trudging on. But we've done good. It was great going up the West Coast and coming back through the Midwest. And currently we are in Canada. We're playing Toronto tomorrow, which we've got artillery jumping on with us because they're out on the road. And we were both playing in town at the same day and said, what the hell, let's put it together. Oh, so nice. It's like a mini festival tomorrow. That would be very cool.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. How was the lineup? I mean, because I talked to the Wicked guys in the very beginning of the tour, right as they jumped on in New Orleans. And then I got to talk to the Vicious Rumors guys at the show in Lotharo. What a bill. I mean, it's a different bill because I gave the guys some Wicked shit. I'm like, you're like the needle in the haystack on this bill. And I do understand that Gutter, his dad used to roadie for you guys back in the day, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, very, very cool indeed. Gunner's turned into quite the force of nature there. But that's what you want. You don't want all the bands to sound the same. And, you know, there's some commonality, obviously, between Vicious Rumors and ourselves, as we're from the same era and that. But you've got Lutharo, who's a young, more modern band, I guess, with Krista, who's a wonderful singer. And you've got Wicked, who's doing the whole, it's almost like the 80s trip revisited, you know. But they're great at what they do, and they've got good songs, you know. And so that, to me, it makes for a good night. If you're just getting pummeled like one of those death metal nights where you've got 19 bands that are interchangeable, that doesn't do anything for you. Here, there's a little bit of up and down, you know, which is cool, you know.
Yeah, I love the variety.
We always want to have good bands playing with us. Who the hell wants to play with substandard acts, you know? These guys are all great, and we're all getting along well, and it's making for a great package, absolutely.
That's awesome. Did you guys ever get Chad a shirt, though?
No, that's a long-standing problem with Chad wearing clothing. He got up to sing with us at one gig, and he was described as being the feral kid from the Road Warrior, which I thought was very appropriate.
Nice. Well, also, I wanted to break up your last record. It came out last year, All Hell's Breaking Loose. So solid. I love how you guys, you know, you're 50 years in, which to me is crazy. I discovered you 50 years ago, and to see you still doing it with the same emotion and power on stage. I mean, you guys haven't lost anything live. I know you had the record before that, Metal City. How would you differ Metal City from All Hell's Breaking Loose?
I think just All Hell's Breaking Loose benefited a lot from the process of doing Metal City. We just took what we were doing and just pushed the bar a little higher, you know. And also the recording and the whole process for Metal City was a little more chaotic. Obviously, it was the first time we'd worked with Mike, and the initial recording didn't go well. There was issues with the studio we were at. We had to like pick up our toys and go home and start over. And it ended up, we recorded the album with Michael Wagner at his studio. Wow. One of the last productions he did, actually, which was phenomenal, getting the old team back together, as it were. And then the mix didn't work out the way we wanted it, and we had to farm that out to like three or four guys until we got the guy who did the best job. But this time around, we did all the recording at Mike's studio, and it was really just the three of us. And then when it came to mixing, this guy Lasse Lammert over in Germany's phenomenal engineer mixer did a fantastic job and gave us technical assistance all the way through. So there wasn't that, you know, jumping from pillar to post. It was the three of us, we, you know, producing each other, as it were, you know.
Oh, nice.
It worked out really good because we know what we want. And what we wanted was an album with 10 songs, about, you know, 40 minutes long, no longer. Boom, 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 smack you over the head with a sledgehammer. And, you know, a proper rock and roll album. You know, like when we were kids, you wanted Montrose first album, Van Halen first album, that kind of effect. But it's so cool, you want to play it again afterwards.
Yeah, you know? There's a lot of really good riffs on this record. One thing I wanted to ask you is, you've been in the band with your brother for 50 years. How is the songwriting process go, maybe from when you guys started out to where it is today? Has it evolved a lot, or are you guys still doing the same sort of things when you're writing songs that you did years ago?
I think we're just, you kind of have to be the longer you go on. We're just a bit more critical. We really put it through the ringer. It's just like, you know, you got to have You got to have those ideas. You got to have the riffs, and we never have any shortage of them. But it's you know, going through the mountain of riffs and picking out the diamonds, the pure gold, and then going, okay, where do we go from here? What does this suggest? Does this suggest a direction for a song or a lyric? You know, individually, I mean, and it was great having Mike coming up with riffs on this, you know, because he's beating his way into playing guitar, and he's, you know, if he can't play it, he'll hum it or say, you know, do this. And so, you know, definitely some of the songs were his ideas, you know. So we all come up with stuff and we bounce it off each other. So it's like, well, what do you think of this part? Well, that's too long, or this could be better, or cut that part out, or put this part in. And, you know, you play Tetris with it till it all makes sense. And once we've got that together, then we basically work on getting the drums the way we wanted it. And Mike would play to scratch stuff, and we would go, maybe change this. And the arrangements would again get changed slightly to the point where we were all set with that. And then we'd go in and do guitars. And at every stage of the process, there's always that 20-25% of what if, the improvisational aspect of it, you know. There's always try this, see if this works. And that's where the magic is. It's otherwise, it's like, you know, bricklaying. You've got, you know, it's a craft. There's talent and creativity, and then there's craft. That's how you can have, like, you know, some billion-dollar produced album, which sounds amazing, but it's just junk, you know, because there's no bark in it. You got to have that. And we pride ourselves on producing these last two albums, which is totally different process for us, having the drums done first, you know, and working through that. But we understand why, because Mike's able to plot out what we did and go, okay, they were a little faster here, a little slower here, a little faster here. And then he has the ability to go, I don't like what I did, let me change this, and be creative. Just like if you were doing a guitar part and go, I screwed up here, let's fix that, let's make it the way you want it. So it's that combination of getting it right, but keeping the magic, trying to get that together. And I hear it, and it's the three of us playing together in one room. It does that. It does. It gives that feeling, and that's what it's all about. But it gives you that control over how it turns out at the end of the day. So it's good. It's the old dogs learning new tricks. You know, it's working out good for us.
Well, it sounds like he's brought in kind of like a new energy, being a little bit younger guy too. And you guys are trying some new things that probably inspire you as well in writing and playing and everything.
Yeah,
as
well. Yeah. It was, you know, it's definitely made a huge difference in a very good way, and we have the ability to play anything from our catalog at any, you know, if we say, okay, let's pull out a song off Life's a Bitch, and Mike will go through and learn it, and then we'll go over it, and we'll end up, you know, he makes it his own, we make a new version of it, and we'll do stuff like that. And it's something we've been having fun on this tour. We've been doing Inquisitor, which we've never played in 30 years. Wow. Something daft like that, you know, so that's been fun. and obviously playing a couple more of the new songs is also always fun. And throwing a couple of crazy things into the jam at the end, you know, it'll surprise people. So it keeps it fresh for us, and it makes it interesting for people that they're not coming, you know, well, I saw them, whatever, 18 months ago, it's going to be the same. No, it's never the same, you know, so we keep it different.
That's awesome. Well, a song I wanted to bring up that I really dig that you didn't play live at Houston was The Far Side. I love the chorus, and I like the chugging, the chug riff in it. It's a really cool song. Can you tell me a little bit about how that song came together? Or do you remember? I know it's been a year ago.
I had a whole bunch of songs, and that was one of the ones that Mike picked up on and just goes, that's a killer. I love that. I really want to do something with that. So the beats kind of got changed around where it was kind of half time, it went double time, and where it was double time, it went half time. And it turned the song inside out, obviously, as it would do. And I mean, the main thing that hits you is it's very melodic.
Yeah.
Very heavy, very melodic. And we put some fun stuff in right after the solo, where it's a bunch of unison and, you know, drums and guitar playing off each other. And that makes it very cool. And they kept pushing me to do crazier bass riffs in the end. And like, all right, let's go for it.
That's nice. I really dig that song. It's really, really solid.
Yeah, I mean, all of those songs, like I say, the prerequisite was they all had to kick ass. They all had to be crazy. But they're all different in their own way. And that one, and the other one that's like really loud and crazy and melodic is probably Victory's Call. Same kind of thing.
That's a really cool song too.
So it's a great challenge, but it's always been a part of what we do. You've got the chaos and the craziness and the noisy balanced with melody and structure and songwriting. You know, if you lean too far one way or the other, it all kind of doesn't work. But there's a recipe, a balance in there, and when it's right, we know it's right.
And another one I'm really digging is Edge of a Nightmare, and I love Mark's solo at the end of that, how that was sewn in at the very end. I thought that was really cool too. A lot of variety on the record.
Yeah, definitely. Mark's playing's really, I think he went up to a new level on this one, because he's he's really playing great, but he's also playing very melodic. Yeah. Some of these really like signature, like almost like horn lines or something. You know, they're really sticking your mind. They're very catchy hooks, yeah. Very hooky. And then he'll go off and do stuff like that, you know. So he really kind of took the ball and ran with that on that for sure.
Well, I've noticed that too live. It seemed like, because I've seen you guys in the past, but it just seemed like on this tour, I mean, everybody's really given it, but Mark is playing. He just, like you said, I believe he's took it up a new level. I'm not sure if it's intentional or if he's just, I don't know, he's just feeling it right now, you know?
He's just enjoying the hell out of playing, that's for sure, yeah.
And I have a question for you, because you sing very high-pitched. How do you keep your voice? You still sound like you did 50 years ago, basically. I mean, you still have the range. What do you do to kind of keep your voice to where you can sing like you do still?
Well, I never drank, never smoked, never did any of the stupid stuff. So basically, as long as I get my 40 winks in every night, I'm good. Oh, and awesome. The more we play, the stronger my voice gets. So it's like working out, working your muscles, you know. The more you do it, the better it gets. So touch wood, we're doing good.
Well, I did want to bring something up because I got to meet Mark briefly after the show in Houston. And I brought up, you know, back in the day when you guys were on Atlantic and you kind of got a makeover by the label. I have a question, because at the same time, bands like Metallica, Anthrax, they were still getting pretty heavy, but Atlantic's like, no, we want you guys to be more commercial. What happened there? I mean, I'm sure you guys are like, what? Hey, we're kind of a thrashy metal band, and you want us to be more of a hard rock band. You know, was that a hard pill for y'all to swallow back in the day, or were you like, we can do it, but...
Yeah, I mean, that comes back to that thing about craft. It's like, we can do it. Was it the right thing to do? No. Everyone goes on about the Stay Hard album, but the Stay Hard album was pretty much uninterfered with by the record company, other than they wanted us to redo Hard Ride, which was kind of a waste of time, because it's nowhere near as good. But the package back, there was definitely, you know, it was as if they wanted Kiss meets Bon Jovi or something, you know, because, you know, they loved the over-the-top attitude of the band and all that. And it was all third party, but, you know, they'd lean on the producer to, you know, make things a little more palatable. So when you were doing like 6 guitar overdubs and 3 of them were clean, guess which ones would be pushed to the forefront on that album. And it was done half-hearted because at the end of the day, they didn't want to put that money where their mouth was because they wouldn't give us money to do videos for that album. And we just said, this is enough. You know, we've worn the red nose long enough. We're going to go and do what we want to do and stand or fall by that. And you got to understand, you got a bunch of guys in the early 20s in another country under somebody else's dime, living on 20, 30 bucks a week or whatever, you know. And so you think, as you do in life, these other people know better. And the longer it goes on, you realize most people don't know shit. And you just got to kind of trust in your guts and do what you got to do, you know. So we kind of had a... you know, come to Jesus moment, and we sat down and just said, let's do an EP and kind of plant the flag. This is where we are. This is what we're doing. That was the Mad EP. You know, and it was a strange time in music because you had people veering towards the hardcore thrash and glam. And we were neither. We really were neither. We were, you know, too song orientated to be a thrash band and too heavy to be a glam band. And then, of course, all that got washed away when grunge came in. It all got washed away. So we just concentrated on where music made sense, and that was Germany and Europe.
Oh, yeah.
And you just make hay where the sun shines, and it really took about another 6 or 7 years before the world got grunge and new metal kind of out of its system, and more traditional metal started to get popular again. And then, of course, my brother had a terrible accident where he nearly died, and that kind of sidelined us for about 5 years.
Yeah. You guys, I'm going back to the Atlantic thing. I mean, for you guys to persevere out of that, I saw you guys open for Slayer and Wasp. And that was such a brutal crowd. I saw it in San Antonio, and I'm like, I love Raven. And for people to disrespect the way they were, it's just, you know, nutty kids back in the day. I think the way the music mind works now is it's more open to different things, like your tour right now, where you can have kind of a 80s glam hard rock band, then you have a progressive new kind of metal band, and then you've got two pure metal bands. But back in the day, it was just like everybody was closed-minded, or a lot of people were. You know, you can't like this.
Yeah.
You can only like this.
It was very fashionable. You know, this is like Rain and Blood time for Slayer. So it's very fashionable for all these specky little 14-year-olds with pimples on their faces to go, I'm evil. We had this song Overload off Life's a Bitch, and we'd play it, and there was a gap about a minute and a half in. We'd just stop, I'd climb over the barrier in these big halls and just stand there and go, okay, who's first? I'll fight every one of you little twats, every one of you, let's go. And they would back off. And we did that every show. And they would back off because they thought it was cool to spit or throw stuff at the beginning because Slayer! Crazy. But and to your point as well, I mean, back in the 60s and early 70s, they would mix the most disparate bands you could ever imagine, you know, King Crimson and freaking John Mayall or something like that. I mean, what? And it would work, but it's a night out of music. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's good music and bad music, or the music you don't like. And that's the way it should be, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And just to go back to your comment about your brother Mark and that accident, thank God he's walking and thank God he's alive, you know, and thank God he's still able to go on stage and play amazing guitar to this day after something so tragic. So my hat's off to him and to the band for persevering through all the bullshit from like some of the stuff going on in the 80s, and then an accident, you could just say, you know what, enough, we're done, right off in the sunset. But you guys are still doing it, and you're still making great music, and performing and kicking ass on stage.
Well, that's at the end of the day, we love what we do. And, you know, it's never easy. It's never has been easy. When we first started, we started playing, and then the gigs went down because punk rock came along. And you had to fight against that. And then things went up a bit because of the whole cachet of the new wave for British heavy metal, you know? So it's up and down, and you just got to roll with it, you know? And from where we're from, that's a local characteristic. Geordies, people from Newcastle, are tenacious. They don't stop.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have another question about another song on the record, Go for the Gold. I love the video. It looks like you guys are generally having fun with it. And I'm not sure if you guys are planning to do more videos for the record, but I have to ask, are you guys big footy fans? And if so, who's your team? I mean, you are from the UK, so I'm sure you love to watch a little footy. I have a friend that's an Arsenal fan, so if you're a footy fan, just make sure to talk shit about Arsenal if you don't like them, because he'll be listening.
Londoners. I'm from Newcastle, so it's got to be Newcastle United, and they're doing pretty damn well at the moment. They're in the top 10, and they've got a really cool team, and they're doing great. I'm peripherally following it. I'll watch the occasional game, but I don't get too hooked up in it. You know yourself, you probably know people that watch, like, you know, 3 and 4 American football games a week. And it's just like, life's too short for that. Sorry.
Agreed. I have time for one on a Sunday, and that's about it.
Yeah. You know, if you're invested, and even if you're invested, it's a painful way to spend your day. Because if your team loses, you're miserable.
Oh, yeah. I could tell you a story about this guy. I think Arsenal lost a really big match, and we couldn't even talk to him. He was so pissed off. Him and his wife's like, I apologize for him. We're out of here. So,
yeah, you can take these things a little too seriously. I mean,
well, so you're almost done with the tour. It's wrapping up here the next probably 3 weeks or so.
Finish. I think the last date's May 4th.
Nice. So, are you guys are based in the U.S. now, right?
Well, I'm half the time in Newcastle and half the time in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
Mark and Mike are obviously both in the States. So we get the tour finishing, and then we've got a festival in Mexico at the end of June. And then right after that, we've got a short run in Scandinavia. We've got two festivals and have like 4 or 5 dates in between that. And then in August, we've got a 10-15 date run with a bunch of festivals. We're playing Wacken.
Oh, nice. June.
We're playing Alcatraz in Belgium, and I think at least one more festival, and then a bunch of club dates in between that. So that'll take us through there, and we're just wrapping up details to go to Asia in November.
Oh, wow. So,
like Singapore, Bangkok, Australia, hopefully Japan with that as well. So that'll be great.
Oh, sounds like you're going to be busy. I was going to ask, if you had a little bit of time off, would y'all start writing for another record, or are you just going to take some time to decompress?
Already doing that.
Oh, wow. Nice.
As soon as it's wrapped up, I think, okay, let's go. So there's lots of ideas on the table, lots of songs. And there's got to be, because that's what made the process work, especially on the last 3 albums, as we wrote so many songs. And some of the songs just didn't fit, you know? So you've got maybe a pool of 30 which we had, and say, okay, what would be the best opening song? What would follow that? What would follow that? What would be a great ending? You know? And you might have something that's a bit more progressive or long-winded and go, well, that's great, but doesn't fit with this particular album concept. Maybe that would fit on an EP or maybe a different album, but it doesn't fit with what we've got as a skeleton to start with. So it either goes on the shelf or there's other songs that are like, well, this is great, but it needs too much work at the moment. You know, there's not a consensus. It's got to be all three of us go, yes, that's it. That's the one you want. So it's just the nature of the game. You always write way more than you need. And that's, you know, it's, again, it's work and a muscle. The more you write, the better you get at it, you know, really. So we're doing that process right now. We're starting to come up with ideas, and we'll just build them up and have a nice cachet for when it comes around. I don't know, maybe the fall of next year we'll start looking at thinking of getting in and doing something. Yeah.
How long do you archive, like, one of these ideas from maybe two or three records ago before you say, you know what, it never worked, it's 4 years old, I don't want to revisit it? Or do you hold on to stuff that's, say, 10, 15, say, even 50 years old, that you're like,
a good idea is a good idea. So, I mean, there's a riff from 82, 83, that I'd always wanted to make a song out of and finally did last year. And it didn't go on the record, but it's still a cool song that went into a song. And then you'll have stuff, you know, it's obviously, it's great to look at those, the Island of Misfit Toys, I would call it, and just say, what's wrong with this one? And sometimes it takes that, you know, you have to be away from it to have distance and have perspective. And then it's sometimes very obvious. And I've done that over like the last 5-6 years and said, this is a great song. Why don't we change this? And change one thing and everyone's saying, damn it, it's great. Boom. And it can be the simplest thing, but it makes a huge difference. So, yeah, nothing's ever totally off the table. It's just a question of it's a work in progress. And one day you might get to finish it, you know. One day you might not, but it's always possible, you know.
Awesome. And it's great that you don't throw those ideas away. I know I heard a story about Tony Iommi, which is having, like, riffs after riffs after riffs after riffs. And I think he'd play it for, like, Dio. And Dio was like, okay, there's one right there. And some of the stuff was, like, really old stuff that they brought into the new era of whatever writing period they were in. So I think that's cool that you keep that music. And think about it. Like you said, this is a great song. It may not fit on this record, but when we find the record for it to fit on, we'll throw it on and release it.
Yeah. I mean, that's just part of being creative like that. You never just, okay, this is what we need. Let's write 5 songs or 10 songs and boom, that's the end of it. No, that's, you know, that kind of thing is kind of what happened in the 70s when bands were under so much pressure where that's literally, they had a deadline. They had to come up with it. And, you know, they were putting out 2 records a year or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
That can work, you know. Being under pressure like that, you can come up with good stuff, but I think there's a limit to that. You know, it's obviously better to have a slightly more relaxed approach and be able to reflect and look back and go, you know what, maybe we need to, you know, change this rather than just like come up with an idea, finish it, boom, 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 you know, assembly line style, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, 2 more quick questions. One's an easy one, because I'm going to play a song here. What's your favorite song off All Hell's Breaking Loose?
Oh, geez, that's a tough one. You're asking me to choose between our kids. it is tough. I like Victory's Call. I like Go for the Gold. I like Surf the Tsunami. That's the 3 that come right to mind. But they've all got mega valid merit.
Nice. Well, I guess the last question I'll ask you is, you know, putting a set list together, you kind of touched on that earlier in the interview. How long does it take you guys when you start a new tour? And I'm sure it is by country. You probably do different set lists, different countries you go to. How long does it take you to put one together? And do you feel like you have to play something off every record? Or is it, you know, we want to showcase, you know, three or four or five songs from the new record. We'll play the hits and then we'll get a couple oddballs.
It's kind of like you just mentioned there. Kind of the few new ones, the hits, as it were, and a few oddballs. And what can be construed as the hits can move around a little bit too. Nothing is 100% sacrosanct. We've always changed a few things. There's very few songs have always been in the set. They've always, generally always had a little bit of a break, you know. It makes them fresh when you come back to them.
Yeah.
But doing songs from every album it's not feasible. We'd be on stage about 5 hours at this point, because we've got like 15 studio albums, so it's crazy. And obviously you want to try and, as you go on, go, well, we never did anything off this album in years. Let's take a look, and maybe there's something cool we can do. And that would be one of the oddball things, you know. And that keeps it fresh for us and fresh for the audience. They're not getting, you've got another thing coming again, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no shit. I got you. Well, John, before we let you go, is there anything you want to tell the fans out there?
I just thank you very much for your support. Thanks for coming out on the road. We're still out for about another 12, 13 dates, I think. So check out Official Raven on officialraven.com. Was it ravenlunatics.com? And I'm on there, Facebook as well. And we'll be posting the dates. Check it out. Come and see us. And kick ass. And thank you again over the years for all the support. And there's a lot more gas in the tank, let me tell you.
I can agree, because I saw them live and they kicked ass. So, John, I want to thank you for coming on the Ragman Show. But before we let everybody go, you and I need to do something very special. Horns up!